All right. Thanks to Peter King for joining us, taking a little time out of his busy schedule during the playoffs. And Peter, I have to start with the news from last week. Sam Wyche, you covered the Bengals in the early 80s for the Cincinnati Enquirer. And Wyche's first year, what was that like for you?
Lindsay, it was unlike any year that I've ever covered football. And this is my 36th season covering the NFL in some form, either being a beat reporter covering a team or covering the league as a whole. And Wyche was just a, in so many ways, he was an open book. And I think he really took pleasure in trying to educate me and trying to educate the other writers who covered the team. At the time, it was Jack Brennan and Marty Williams from Dayton. You know, he would have sat with us for a long time to answer any questions we had. In fact, that first year I covered him in 1984, I lived in the dorm at Wilmington College where they were, and he would tell me that after team meetings at night, any time, just come in and see him, and he would be happy to talk to me. So, I don't know, a few times that summer, I would just go down and knock on his door and ask him about things related to the team and, you know, or ask him football questions about his offense. And he was always, you know, extremely welcoming. Now, we also butted heads quite a few times, you know, and so it was not a perfect, you know, time to cover the team, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. And I just am very, very grateful to him. And we kept in touch in the years after that. And I think he always felt like he was always so interested in everything in life. You know, he was a county commissioner in Pickens County, South Carolina in the last few years. You know, he's a volunteer high school football coach at the local high school. He was into everything. And he's just a very, very interesting sort of football renaissance man.
I think one of my favorite things about him, of course, it was all before my time, so I've been able to read about some of the Sam stories, and I've interviewed him a couple times, but he wasn't afraid to toe the line with the league. Were you surprised with him when he did that?
Oh, there were so many things about the league that he fervently disliked. And, you know, the women in the locker room thing, I think, was the first one that he couldn't. Sam was one of these guys who, you know, he's like a dog who grabs onto a rope. You know, you're going to have to break his jaw to get the rope out of his mouth. And that's the way he was with issues. He was like that with officiating. He went crazy when the NFL implemented a noise rule saying they would penalize the home team if the visiting team could not hear the offensive signals. He thought that was the dumbest thing he'd ever heard of. And it turns out they ended up killing that rule. Why, he would say, why in the world would you penalize fans for being excited? I mean, that's just the craziest thing he ever heard. And I, you know, at the time, I saw what people were saying, and I thought it was reasonable and sportsmanlike to allow the other team to hear the signals. But look, if you can't hear the signals, then use hand signals. So, but anyway, he would... He really, there was one time he walked into a team meeting, 89 or 90, when he was going through the whole women in the locker room thing, and he goes, hey, listen, we're making plans that if I'm suspended, here's the contingency plan for the coaching staff. And the players are looking around, what are you talking about? Well, then he told them that Paul Tagliabue was considering suspending him because he was fighting the women in the locker room thing so hard. But he just was... There were some principles that he felt he simply would not compromise, even though now you look back on some of them and he was on the wrong side of history.
Yeah, I actually talked to some of his former players, including Stanford Jennings, and a lot of them I just asked, how do you think Sam should be remembered? I know a lot of Cincinnati Bengals fans now, they think of it, he's the one that took them to a Super Bowl, and they would have that back in a heartbeat. There are a lot of memories off the field, too, and that's what Stanford liked to point out. How do you think he should be remembered?
Well, in a football sense, the way I remember him is, you know, I'll never forget. I mean, there were so many people at the time in the mid and late 80s, football people who really hated Sam Leitch. Chuck Noll called him Harry High School. And he thought the no-huddle offense was basically a perversion of fair football. And so it just, and really, in hindsight, man, does that make Chuck Noll look terrible? You know, and, you know, and look, I value Chuck Noll. He's one of the 10 best coaches of all time, without question. But if you're playing by the rules, unless they change the rules, there's no reason why you have to huddle before every play. Sam just wanted football to be fun. He used to say things to me like, shouldn't football be fun? Aren't we out here to entertain people? Let's do different things. And he also knew that competitively, by doing some different things and by sort of living on the edge, that your team was going to have a better chance to win. Now, it didn't work all the time. There were some of the things that that ended up really kind of, you know, slapping them in the face and not working. But in a football sense, I thought he was so incredibly innovative. It's interesting, Jeff Hobson, who now works for Bengals.com, you know, who I know really well, he told me over the weekend that how amazing it was that in 1968, when the Bengals were born, one of the quarterbacks on the roster was Sam Leitch. He was there for 3 years. Bill Walsh was an offensive coach, and Paul Brown was the head coach. Now, if you look at this now, it's you could easily make the argument that those are three of the 10 most innovative offensive people in NFL history. And they were together in this expansion Cincinnati laboratory for 3 years, which is really amazing when you think about it. I think off the field, what he really ought to be remembered for is the fact that he cared about people. You know, he did a lot of stuff with the homeless. And in 1984, when I covered the team, I asked him, because he did a lot of magic work. He was a magician. And I know people say, what do you mean? I said, no, he was a magician. That was a great hobby of his. He just loved it. And I asked him one time, there was a group home, a boys' home on the east side of town in Anderson Township. And we lived in, my wife and I lived in Mount Washington. And so I asked Collinsworth and Chuck Schoner if they would go over to this place with me and do kind of a Christmas program. And so they were all into it. We got a couple of Bengals over. And Collinsworth, in fact, people won't even know what these are now. But back in the day, 35 years ago, the greatest little toy was this thing called a Walkman, where you would put a cassette tape in a portable recorder and playback machine, and you'd put a pair of headphones on, and you just walk around with this thing clipped to your belt listening to music. And so Collinsworth and Schoner got these things, I think it was Chris is doing, for every one of the boys in that thing. This was going to be their Christmas gift to them. And so I asked Sam to come to put on a little magic act for them, and he did. Like, he wore his tuxedo, brought his top hat, and he put on a 20 to 30 minute magic show for these kids, and they were absolutely entranced. So that's kind of how I'll remember him.
Oh my goodness, amazing stuff. Well, I'll have you here, Peter. We definitely have to talk about the Bengals too in 2019, yep. Because I haven't had a chance to talk to you all season long. As you know, a disappointing season, 2-14 under their first year head coach, Zach Taylor. What did you gather from Taylor's first season in Cincinnati?
Well, he didn't give up on them, that's for sure. And that's a good sign. I really loved the fact that they played so hard down the end of it, down the stretch of the season. And so that's a good sign. I think the other sign is that the Bengals all along believed that there was a good chance that in the next year or two, they were going to move on from Andy Dalton. Now, they're probably going to do that, obviously, now with the extreme likelihood that they'll take Joe Burrow with the first pick. But I think one of the things that they liked about Zach Taylor is that he said, hey, let's give this a shot. Instead of just saying, I don't want to work with Andy Dalton, I want to move on. And he was open to giving it a shot, which I thought was good of him. I'd be really, really excited about a really smart offensive coach, which he is, working with a guy like Joe Burrow, who is, look, I'm not a big college football watcher, Lindsay, but you watch them play right now at LSU, and it would be one thing if he was running a dink and dunk offense. He's not. He's throwing the ball down the field with tremendous accuracy. And I don't know what their plans are with any of these guys, but tell you what, if I'm A.J. Green and Tyler Boyd, I say, you know, let me stay in Cincinnati because the next 3 or 4 years could be really fun.
Peter, you hit on a couple things there, and I'll have to follow it up right now. And you said Zach Taylor didn't give up on his locker room. And it's funny because I talked to some of the vets in the locker room who've been there for over 10 years, and they told me people don't see it on the outside. Yeah, they had a disappointing season, but the culture is changing. What difference does it make having the culture change inside the locker room? How big is that for the team?
Because people have to want to come to work. They have to want to play football and be excited about playing football to really be great. You watch Russell Wilson play football, and I mean, you could tell Russell Wilson right now, we're going to take away this out of your life, take away that out of your life, and all this stuff. And the one thing he would say is, please don't take away football. He plays it with such a joy. Drew Brees is like that. Brady is like that. I mean, there's so many players who are like that. And I think you have to want to come to work in order to be good. And when you're losing, there's a lot of guys, it doesn't matter what, how good the coach is, they're going to have trouble getting up and coming to work and saying, what does it really matter? And I think he did a good job with that, because that's the same thing I heard coming out of that team, that people like this coach, they want to play for him. And so I just think, look, the first year or two of a new coach, when things were going south anyway, are going to be challenging. So I think people just have to say, hey, look, we're going to get a new quarterback. We got the new coach. Let's look at 2020 and 21. Those are going to be our turnaround years.
And as you mentioned, Andy Dalton, they're more than likely going to move on from Andy. But as you remember, this team, I mean, they struggled in the 90s. Andy Dalton did take them to 5 playoff appearances. I know everybody will criticize not being able to get that win. Andy has told us several times during regular season and even after that he wants to be a starter in this league in 2020. Could you see that happening?
I think it depends on where he goes. I mean, let's just say for the sake of argument, and I don't have any idea where he'll go. But let's just say for the sake of argument, Andy Dalton signs a 2-year contract in Chicago. Well, I could see that if they're 0-3 and Mitch Trubisky isn't playing well, I could see him being inserted into the lineup. I think this year that they had a better option than Chase Daniel, to be their backup. I think they might have pulled Trubisky at some point during the year and moved to the backup. So I think you have to go to a place that there's going to be some question already about the starter in order to ensure that you could go somewhere and have a shot. The interesting team, I'll tell you, if I were, and I know this is going to sound weird, if I were the Pittsburgh Steelers, I would be interested in Andy Dalton. I really would be. Because you don't know what the future holds for Ben Roethlisberger. Eli Manning is basically aging out of the league. Phillip Rivers, no assurance that he'll be back with the Chargers. That's the same draft as Ben Roethlisberger. He's been hurt a lot lately. That would be a team I would investigate hard if I were Andy Dalton.
Peter, you know what's going to happen. If he goes to Pittsburgh, he's going to get that playoff win.
Well, if you really like Andy Dalton and don't just love the Bengals, you'd be happy for him, because Andy Dalton is such a pro and such a good, good human being that, you know, look, And because I don't care who wins. You know, I don't root for any team. I like to see players. Like, you saw Josh McCown after the Eagles playoff loss. Josh McCown is, you know, in the 36 years I've covered in the NFL, one of my 5 sort of favorite people who I've gotten to know. He's so selfless, so interested in other people, and so that I just when I saw him playing yesterday, part of me was saying, "Come on, Josh! But I do think that there's some of that with guys like Andy Dalton, who just, I don't know him well, but I've talked to him a bunch of times. He just seems like a very, very good human being. And those are the kind of guys who you just hope that they end up going somewhere that's good for them.
Andy does a lot of great things off the field. I root for his 2020 success. I'm going to stick with quarterbacks. My last question before I let you go. You've been great with your time, Peter. I know you had a chance to talk to Tom Brady after the game, and it was crazy because on social media, they react right away after he throws the pick six, and some are like, oh, he's done. He's not going to come back. There's no way that Tom Brady is going to leave the NFL after pick six, right?
Well, honestly, I don't really think that's going to be his motivating factor, Lindsay. I think no matter what happened at the end of that game, on the first play of the game or the last play of the game, it's a great storyline. He's never going to leave on a pick six. I just don't think he works that way. He walked into the stadium on Saturday knowing that whatever the result was on Saturday, he's playing football in 2020 somewhere, if somebody will have him. And that is the big takeaway from my time with him around midnight Saturday night after the game. My big takeaway is he is itching. Honestly, after taking some time off, he always goes with his family to Costa Rica for a little time in the January, February area at some point. And so he'll do that. But even when he's there, he's going to be working out. He's going to be doing some things. He does not have this football thing out of his system. Doesn't matter if he's 43. I think he's absolutely certainly going to play next year if a team that has some good offensive weapons, and maybe that'll be New England, will have him. But that was my one takeaway from talking to him.
Yeah, if New England does take him and they sign him again, he does need some weapons. And I have to share this quick story with Peter because he is taking time with us. I will tell everyone right now, he's my first guest, my first football guest I ever booked. And it's been 9 years ago, Peter. I saw you at Bengals training camp in Georgetown. I went over to you. I said, I need to have you on the show so I can impress my boss that I got this amazing Sports Illustrated guest at the time when you were with SI. And you joined us. You've been great with your time every year. Whenever I ask you, you always take 10, 15 minutes to join us, and I can't thank you enough.
Hey, no problem, Lindsay. It was great. I appreciate it. And all the best to you.
Thanks, Peter. Again, check out his piece this morning, Football Morning in America. Great stuff on the feature with Tom Brady and a section on former Bengals coach Sam Wyche.